Okay, if you all could find our seats, we'll go ahead and get fired up here. Mike, do we have a spot for you somewhere? Okay, good. And we can start because I was told Kenji wasn't going to be here, and Kenji is here, so now we can officially start. So.
I said I wasn't going to be at the party.
Oh, when there's food involved, then you're going to show up. Well, welcome, everybody. Glad to have you all here. We have a very good turnout today, and we have a lot of important things to discuss. But before we do we have anybody on the phone?
Yes, Merrill.
Oh, hi, Merrill. Glad to have you on the phone.
Anybody?
Anybody else?
Yeah, this is Seth.
Nope, didn't get all that. Try it again.
With Seth.
Oh, Senator, good to have you, Senator. Glad to have you on the phone. Anybody else?
And this is Keta Gonzalez.
Okay, glad to have you on, Keta. Anybody else? Okay, we've got three on the phone. So, as we all know, this is our last meeting. I just want to cover the objectives for the meeting this afternoon. We're going to discuss the implications of the ballot measure resulting on the funding recommendation. So we'll be going around the room asking each task force member to, if they would like to give some comments on that and what you think or don't think that may impact what our recommendations are going to be. Share results of additional outreach plan and our plan for additional outreach from this point on, and whether you would be involved or not involved in helping us with that outreach as we move into the legislative process. Agree on the process for finalizing the task force report. We have Jim's summary of recommendations, which we'll go over in some detail, and then conduct a final review of the proposed recommendations and identify strategies for moving forward, coalition building, legislative contacts, presentation materials, and then we are going to, thanks to Jim, have a hosted social event. And the way Jim expresses it is to express the planning team's appreciation to the task force members for their service. And we'll be doing that from 3 to 5 today at the Archive Coffee and Bar. So I want to thank you right up front for doing that. Okay. So before we, I see we have no public comment, but I'm going to ask, first of all, and I didn't get Jason ahead of time, but I think I did talk to him at a meeting I was at and say, if you are here, I would like to have you say a few words. This is Jason Miner. If you could come on up to the table, please, sir. This is Jason Miner. He is the governor's new natural resources director. So he's probably a little bit of a deer in the headlights, but we had a chance to talk for a half hour or so. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to private comments that you'd like to have, sir.
Chair Lampart, I just wanted to say many of the faces around the table are very familiar, and I wanted to say thanks so much for the amount of work this task force has put into this important issue. You've seen it through changes in the governor's natural resource office with Beth Brownscombe and Richard Whitman being involved, and now myself recognizing them as the last meeting. Very much looking forward to the recommendations that come out of the task force. But I recognize, and the governor recognizes, that thousands of hours, as much as 10,000 hours of your time, have gone into evaluating this work, putting together recommendations, and working together to achieve consensus. And frankly, we couldn't be more thankful.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Jason or Okay, thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Appreciate you making the time to come down and visit with us.
Old friends and old faces.
Good. Okay, so let's move right into our housekeeping items. Jim, any housekeeping items?
So as typical, I loaded you up with materials, and there were two batches of communications, some important things in those. One was a piece that Nancy passed along from the Nature Conservancy that kind of summarizes at a national level all the measures that were approved that fund conservation. So a good piece of news nationally. And then I just sent out some communication back and forth between myself and Senator Whitsett that we'll probably go through talk about this afternoon. And then in front of you, I made sure that you had a copy of the summary of our recommendations, because we're going to go through those in detail. Also gave you a copy of a piece we've been using in our presentation to summarize the survey results. And I gave you a copy of the latest PowerPoint. So if you're wondering what your staff is saying to other folks out in the field, the PowerPoint pretty well covers it. And then we sent out just a few days ago an updated funding level details. So if you recall back in the work group phase, we went through that stuff in detail that helped form the recommendations on the funding need. We've gone back and played with that a little bit based upon where we are with the funding need back at the 86.9 million per biennium. And so we made sure all of that matches. That's the most up-to-date on how the funding will be distributed, the number of positions will be created, et cetera.
Okay.
Schedule of task force meetings. So we're going to shift to weekly meetings. That's my joke for the week. Meeting.
That's your best joke.
I was going to say, you didn't have a joke to start off with today.
Yes, he did.
I'll save it for later.
Oh.
So that's it here.
Okay. Thank you very much. So now let's move on to report from any of the members. Do any of you have any reports from any constituent groups that you've met with since our last meeting? And I think, Paul, you have. So I'm going to ask, I gave him a little bit of a heads up, so yeah, I wasn't surprised. But anybody else will ask if you've met with any of your constituent groups. So go ahead.
Yeah. We had a board meeting of our board of directors a week ago or so, and to talk about the final recommendations of the report. Because as I'd indicated at the last meeting, we had some concern about the income tax surcharge. Our organization, Oregon Hunters Association, we're very supportive of fish and wildlife, goes without saying, and we're very supportive of most of this report. But the board voted to accept the task force report without endorsing an income tax surcharge. With the beverage tax as our preferred alternative if we're just going to put forward those two options. So kind of in a nutshell, that's where we're at.
Okay, and we're going to discuss these in detail a little bit later. We're just kind of reporting out now on what we may or may not have heard. So anybody else? Yes, Claire.
Jim and I met a few weekends ago down in Corvallis with all of the Audubon chapters in the state. I think there are 12 or 13 of them. And they did not take a position on any of the recommendations or proposals, but it was more informing them and answering their questions that they had. So.
Okay. Yes. Roger?
I met a couple of weeks ago with a group in Washington, including conservation organizations, hunting community, fishing community, and the Department of Fish and Wildlife in Washington that are trying to start a similar effort. As we are doing here, give them an update on what we're doing, and they're very interested in the progress that's occurred here. And in fact, the governor up there may very well be setting up a task force to take on a similar task as this group has done.
So they said we did great work, so they want to follow our lead. Is that
right? So expect your invitations from
let's hope
Governor Jay Inslee. Any
we aren't done yet.
That's what I'm saving my jokes for.
Anybody else? Okay. Representative Helm, welcome. Glad to have you here, sir. We've got Senator Whitsitt on the other end of the phone also. And for those of you who don't know, Senator Edwards is going to be, I don't know what his exact title is, but he's going to go to work for the University of Oregon. And so he will be resigning from his Senate post, probably effective pretty soon. And so he will be sorely missed by the Senate, I'm sure, and being replaced, that'll be an interesting political discussion for his replacement. So,
Mr. Chair, I did share my take on a meeting we had last week with Senator Witt, Representative Witt.
Yeah, go ahead.
Barnhart, and I shared my take. It'd be good if you and Roger shared yours.
Okay, go ahead, Roger.
I thought Jim did a pretty good job capturing a good good feedback from Representative Barnhart. Thought that the case was laid out well and that the need was identified. The challenge was in figuring out what the funding source might be. I think, as he put it, was a lot of these task force do a great job when it comes to identifying the need and the problem and the solution, but where it has the challenge is understanding the tax issue, and that's really the role that the legislature sees itself playing in that particular discussion.
My take on it was a little bit different than I tend to be an optimist, so I was walking into the meeting thinking pretty optimistic. And for those of you who don't know, it was Representative Witt, who is chair of Ag and Natural Resources Committee, and Representative Phil Barnhart, who is the chair of the House Revenue Committee. And of course, that's where revenue bills start, is in the House. And so I was thinking pretty optimistically that we were going to go in there and brief them and they were going to be on board with us, and because Representative Witt is a pretty strong supporter. And at the end of the meeting, I mean, we did our briefing and I thought it went very well, and Representative Barnhart left the meeting and it was almost ecstatic from Representative Witt. He says, "Oh, this went fantastic. This was great." And I'm kind of looking at him like, "Well, why wouldn't it go great?" And his comment was that, you know, Representative Barnhart has a huge task before him, $1.7 billion budget deficit, trying to find funding for education, the PERS issues. A lot of revenue bills are going to be coming before him, and he was thinking possibly that, you know, well, I'm sorry, you guys are low priority because we've got all these other huge important issues in the state, and they were. And so, and that's not the reception that we got from Representative Barnhart. The reception we got was very positive, very cordial, very supportive. You know, he has a different tact on how we'd like to propose to move forward, which we can discuss when we discuss the recommendation. So, you know, the perspective that Representative Witt gave us was really positive. So he gave us an hour and a half of his time, and that is amazing when you get a chair of a committee that will give you an hour and a half of time and really detailed delved into the discussions that we were having and asked some really pointed, I thought, insightful questions. You could tell that he had done his homework. You could tell that he had done, he had read the documents that we sent him. And so it was a pretty positive meeting from at least our perspective. So anything else to add? Okay. Any comments on any of that? Okay. So let's move right in now to
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I think you have one more public comment that signed up there.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah. I'm sorry. Just arrived. We're going to get to public comment right after we do the approval of the meeting summary. So thanks, Alicia and Jim, for another great summary. Any questions, corrections, or additions to the meeting summary from the previous meeting? Yes.
A couple real minor corrections. I think it was on page 4, a meeting that I had with the City of Portland Integrated Science Team. Our chair, Mark, was there too. I think your name was omitted in the minutes. And it was not their annual meeting, but
Okay. Any other?
Yes. Submitted just a minor change in writing on my comments around incremental costs associated with hunting and fishing being above the general conservation contributions we were looking for. It was a minor change, but it just clarified my intent and the remarks that I made at the last meeting.
Okay. Any other corrections, comments? Okay, so Alicia, we'll assume with those corrections, the minutes are approved. So now let's move into public comment. I have one person signed up for public comment, but of course, as always, if you have any public comment, we'll let you come on up and speak. So Bob, come on up, and you can sit right over there, Bob. You don't have to come up to the very front if you don't want to.
Good afternoon, members of the task force. My name is Bob Reese. I'm representing the Association of Northwest Steelheaders. But with me, I've got a letter that was signed by the Northwest Guides and Anglers Association, Northwest Sport Fishing Industry Association, and the Coastal Conservation Association I'd like to distribute. This letter, first of all, I guess I'd like to express our deep appreciation for the hard work that you folks are in participating in this task force. We know that the time commitment that it takes to run a task force such as this. Our community has a long history of going to the mat for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife in support of fee increases, policy option packages, and especially through the donation of tens of thousands of hours of volunteer activities that help make the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife a better agency. We are at our wit's end, however, and this letter that's being distributed was a letter that went to the governor, clearly explaining the incredible disconnect the agency has with its largest constituency, sport, anglers, and hunters. I regret to say that our collective community cannot support a recommendation that comes out of this task force's hard work until we feel we get the respect we're due through the full implementation of the Columbia River Reform Package that we paid for, that we sacrificed for, and that we were promised through the intentions made in Senate Bill 830. As leaders in our community, we would be fired if we reneged on our promises made to our respective constituencies, making it even more difficult to go to our memberships to support putting even more money into this agency. We pray that this doesn't happen and that we are all on the same page in the next legislative session. Again, we don't like the untenable position the Oregon Commission has put our organizations in, and we hope to work with this task force in supporting recommendations that fully implement the possibilities that this agency has. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Any questions or comments from folks? Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate your comments. Any other public comments? Public comments. Any other public comments? Okay, we'll have an opportunity at the end for, again, for any public comments. So let's move now into the ballot measure implications on funding recommendations. And what we'd like to do, the leadership group would like to have a, you remember several meetings ago, we identified the need to assess whether and how our recommendations are affected by this year's ballot measures, most notably measure 97 and 99. So I'd like to go around the room, and if you have any observations you may have on any perspective on how you think 97 or 99 may or may not impact recommendations moving forward, because we had a number of discussion points about that. So anybody would like to comment on?
Well, I will share that the week before last, I was invited to a meeting in Washington, D.C. at the White House that was put together by the Outdoor Alliance for Kids, known as OAK, and the CEQ, the Council on Environmental Quality. And in the process of putting that together, they actually asked if I would share a little bit of the story about the passing of Measure 99 here in Oregon. So I had the opportunity, there were about 75 leaders from across the country. OAK is a coalition of all kinds of groups. Sierra Club is kind of the home of it, but that work with connecting kids, families, people in the outdoors. And so I had a few minutes on the agenda to tell the story about what the measure that just passed here. I think the takeaway for me was how closely the rest of the country had been watching that, and the interest in that, and the enthusiasm around the fact that Oregon was making a commitment to environmental education. And there was numerous people who are working in other states who actually came up to me afterwards and asked if they could use some of the lessons that we've learned from it with their legislature in their states, because they're looking at doing similar sort of, they have similar things that they're working with their legislatures for on getting funding for environmental education. So it is being, it has been noticed. It's been, it was noticed by the White House, and it was noticed across the country that this actually happened.
Yeah, it goes, you know, our summary report from Responsive Management talked about how Oregonians support fish and wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
Parrots, the voting yeah. that occurred, so.
Yeah, in fact, in some of the articles, the news earned media that was out there right before the election, a lot of it was tying the interest of fish and wildlife to the idea of getting kids outdoors and educating them in the environment. So in that building, that constituency for people who would later become hunters and fishers. And there was an article and several stories on the East Coast that specifically talked about Measure 99, the Outdoor School for All. And would this be an opportunity in our communities to do something like that to actually grow the number of fishers, hunters, anglers in our state in the future?
Good point, Nancy.
And another good point, I mean, it passed 34 out of 36 counties. It was, it just showed what Oregonians feel about it. And I think there is some opportunity to maybe tie it in and use it to help build hunting and fishing, because as we build the infrastructure, we're gonna have places across the state that will need to be used more than just for outdoor school.
Yeah, we keep getting asked all the time, what's the nexus of our proposals to the outdoors? And mm-hmm. this is an example of a nexus with outdoor funding. So they're willing to put lottery dollars into this, and so maybe the rest of Oregon would be willing to support a proposal that we're supposing too. So, yes, Kenji.
So looking at Measure 96 and 99, they're both going to be pulling out of the lottery funds, which is actually going to put some pressure on state parks funding. So there's going to be a loss there. So just in the larger scope of things, looking at either one, whether it be the income tax or the beverage tax, increasing that a little bit to cover a lot more of the natural resource or outdoor recreation sphere too. So it might be more palatable if you pull in those into whatever package goes forward.
Okay.
Hi, this is Meryl. Can I say something?
Sure.
I just wanted to also remind folks that the Soil and Water Conservation District measure passed in Washington County, which is a pretty sizable county, and I was wondering if there were any other Soil and Water District measures that passed around the state, because at this point, the metropolitan region now has East and West and now Washington County, which has a new tax base and a new opportunity to leverage whatever monies we're going to get. So I just think that that's another, you know, issue or thing to be, you know, put out on the table.
Okay. Anybody else? Yeah, Bruce?
Yeah, and I would just, thinking of Measure 97, and regardless how you feel about that, I think we heard from number of interests that if Measure 97 had passed, that prospects for our proposals here were not very good. And I think the response from Representative Barnhart may be his interest in our recommendations. There are a whole lot of agencies going to be in the same hole going into a $1.7 billion budget deficit. And in this case, the Department of Fish and Wildlife has some work to fall back on that's already been done, making the case for why filling their holes and going beyond that is important, and coming up with some specific recommendations or options to do that. So we aren't just leaving it to the legislature to start with a $1.7 billion hole and look for solutions. At least we have a couple of options to begin to address issues for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. So I think it speaks well to the work we've done.
Anybody else? Okay, let's move on. We're going to now discuss the process for finalizing the task force report. So if you pull out your summary of recommendations that Jim sent. So we'd like to first, I'm gonna have Jim review the process that we went through so we all make sure we understand the process that we've been using to finalize these task force recommendations. You know, we've been meeting monthly since January and we're kind of down to the last point. You know, I bring this book with me every time, but this is all the notes, information that we have from every meeting that we have. So we've got a lot of work behind us that got us to this point where we are today on this summary of recommendations. There's been a couple iterations of it. This is Jim's recommendation for us on the various tasks that we've been charged to by the legislature, our three tasks. So I'm going to ask Jim if you could just summarize that process, and then we'll start going through the recommendations and make sure that the, if there's any changes or corrections or additions that the task force would like to recommend. So, Jim?
Okay. So it's been a little while since you've seen a complete document, and we've been loath to spend too much time on that document until we finalize our recommendations, because they've been moving around. This is appropriate in a process like this. The final document will be a very nice looking document when it's done. It will have all the graphics in it, table of contents, executive summary, and all of that. And we will start putting that together tomorrow. And the intent is to distribute that to you to make sure that you're comfortable with the end product. There will be a signature page. We're going to ask you to sign on to the document. We'll have the chair draft a transmittal letter and look for your signatures on that. That you support the concept that's moving forward. We understand that you may have differences of opinion about specific recommendations, but the general concept that we worked through for the last 11 months, you're willing to endorse. We need to get that into the legislature by the end of December, so we will try to have a document to you within the next couple of weeks so that you have some time to look at it before we put the ribbons around it. So hopefully you're comfortable with that process for actually getting us to a final document. What we've done is extracted what staff felt were the primary recommendations in the document and have organized them for our conversation today. And if we're on task with these recommendations, then we're comfortable beginning to put together this final report.
So is everybody okay with the approach that we're taking? Not the recommendations in specific, but the approach that we're taking. Okay, Jim?
So I'm assuming that if we had like wordsmithing concerns or concerns about language, we could just get that to Jim and they could consider that.
Unless there's substantial changes.
But if there's a big deal that was controversial, I mean, presumably there won't be because we're going through the recommendations now, but let's assume there was a big deal. Would we have some kind of a conference call to discuss whether to delete it or modify it?
If it's a big deal where we need to
right.
change something major. Yeah.
Okay.
Good. Just in terms of the process, are we okay with that?
But if there's a big deal, we need to know about it today.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
But hopefully we'll be around the room discussing that. But
I'm assuming if we're all comfortable today with the set of recommendations, there probably won't be any big deal, but just in case, I just wanted to see.
But we spent a lot of time on
what
them,
if
so.
Thinking was.
Okay, so we're okay with the format, the proposed approach that we're going to take. Okay, I don't see any heads nodding no. So let's now move into the final review of the recommendations. And what I'm going to ask for is endorsement of the proposed recommendations after we've had an opportunity to discuss those. So I'd like to go through, by task and just make sure that we're okay with where we are. So task one, legislative task one, was to identify and recommend potential alternatives for sustainable funding source for ODF&W. We've got nine recommendations that we have discussed in detail. So is there any, can everybody live with those nine recommendation for potential alternative sustainable funding sources? So.
I have a question, this is Merrill.
Go ahead.
For number four, the second bullet, which says improve hunting and fishing opportunities and the elimination of clam license fee increases, is that forever, or is that for a couple of years, Can you be more specific?
Well, to eliminate the planned license fee increases, that's the two license fee increases that were proposed in the legislation. Only the two. There's one in, Director, one in 18, I think, and then one in 20.
Yeah, one effective in January of 19 and 19. January of 18 and one effective in January of 20.
Yeah, and so our recommendations with the proposal would be to eliminate those fee increases.
Okay, and that wouldn't preclude additional fee increases past 20. All right, thank you.
Yes, Jim?
So coupled with that, and so on page 2, item number 9, what we're proposing is future fee increases would be indexed to cost of living or some other appropriate indexing measure. Versus these legislative, the two legislative increases that are on the books. So that there's more certainty for license holders in the future, you would know that the department would use an indexing approach versus every 2 years there's a...
Okay.
Yep.
Under task 1, item 6,
I'm a little confused about how this really how this could be interpreted. It says at a minimum maintain the current general fund and lottery fund allocations to ODFW, and I would think that that's not what we really mean.
This is the fee sweep thing. We want to make it very clear that if one of these proposals move forward, that the legislature doesn't come in and just sweep the general fund and say, well, we'll take your general fund because you're going to get the fee increase. This is the general fund stays as is.
Right. I'm confused about the phrase at a minimum. I mean, I think what we really mean is just maintain these things.
Well, we'd be happy to have them increase it.
Yeah.
So anyway. But this is a good question for the group. So going into this legislative session with the deficit that has to be addressed, one would anticipate an inclination that if our proposal moved forward to either reduce or eliminate the department's general fund allocation. So one of the questions to us is, do we recommend that more than $85.9 million per biennium be generated for the conservation fund to make up for any reduction or loss or elimination of general fund dollars? So I guess, you know, we're coming in with a package based upon $85.9 million. It assumes continuation of general fund and lottery fund contributions at the current level. If those were reduced, maybe we want to recommend that differential be made up through our funding measures.
Jim?
There's a danger as soon as you say that.
I think you've handled it the right way here by saying all of our numbers assume that we can do the conservation job if the general fund lottery fund is still there. That opens up the subsequent discussion in the legislature. If you go to take $30 million out, we won't be able to get the job done, the whole job that we had anticipated, or we're going to have to increase the alternative tax to basically backfill it. But I think the way you've written it here is the right way of emphasizing to the reader that this is a founding assumption that makes the math work.
Everybody else okay with that?
I understand what you're saying, and that's okay, as long as I think it's clear what this is meant. You may want to wordsmith this a little bit to explain the context of what this means.
Okay. Well, and maybe you just do that by saying these recommendations assume that these current funding will be maintained. Because I had the same double take when I read it originally. Someone could take this and say, well, at the very least, they don't want us to reduce funding. If we don't do anything else with any of the rest of these recommendations, it could be misconstrued.
Okay, I see that. Yeah, could be.
That's how I read it, too.
So Jim's taking notes. Good catch. Anything else on task one?
Paul. On number three, the two alternative funding recommendations there, how does that play relative to the conversation you had last week with legislators and them not wanting to necessarily be boxed into one or two options?
Yeah, so I'm going to try to paraphrase what Roger and Jim, help me out. So I'm going to try to paraphrase what I heard Representative Barnhart say. He said that task forces do a really good job of bringing proposals to the legislature, but then when it breaks down is when it gets to the legislature and we have to try to fund it. And so what we had proposed, or what we are proposing, is two options that would be brought forward. And we discussed whether we should have one or whether we should have two or whether we should have a list and those kind of things. And the task force zeroed in on, well, we would like to propose these two options and then the legislature could choose that. And I think Representative Barnhart said, he says, well, that's great, but that could be in the mix of other potential funding options that we may come up with to meet the intent to provide long-term sustainable funding for ODFNW. And so please don't box us in by saying it's either this or nothing, because we may, as a legislative body, say, you know, what did you think about this? And we say, well, I mean, we told him we looked at 100 different options, and we gave him a list. We discussed those options with him, and he says, yeah, those are good, but, you know, this one, fully realized it didn't provide adequate funding. And so he knew that we have done our homework on the various options. But he said he would highly recommend that we don't box ourselves in with just two options, that leave it up to us to work with other members of his committee and the legislature to potentially come up with other options. Is that fair?
I think that.
Okay.
Yeah,
Jim,
I think,
and then Jim and Jim.
Yeah. We debriefed afterwards, and, you know, how do you translate out very succinctly the direction we received, or the suggestion of the direction? So there was strong support for the establishment of an Oregon Conservation Fund that accomplishes the objectives and the outcomes we've laid out in our report. And we expect it will require this amount of funding. We've examined a wide variety of funding mechanisms, with two rising to the top. But we recognize that those two and others need further evaluation by the legislature. Period. So in other words, I think we were getting direction. Don't lead with your funding measures. Lead with the Oregon Conservation Fund accomplishes these objectives.
Yeah, lead with the strategy of, do you want to provide adequate funding for ODFNW? Yes, we do. And here's some ideas for your consideration. So Jim, and then Rob.
Well, I was hoping that I was thinking about what the right response would be to this comment when I read what we heard from Representative Barnhart. And it just seems to me that that the right response isn't just saying, hey, we looked at 100 things, you guys go ahead and look at 100 things. The right response is, we looked at 100 things and we boiled it down to these two as the best of them based on the criteria that we would suggest. And that if the legislature chooses to look at other alternatives to either supplement or replace these two recommendations, we suggest you refer back to these criteria, because it's the criteria that led us to those two primary recommendations, not just we kind of liked them better. And one of the things we ought to do in the text, I think, is suggest that they reference the criteria so that it will assist them as they begin the process of looking at our two primary recommendations or alternatives.
I did spend considerable time going over every criteria that we used as part of the presentation. That, you know, I said, here's the list of criteria, and then I went into detail explaining each criteria when we met with him. So it kind of did narrow it down to, well, this is based on the criteria, here's what we came up with. So
I believe we can just create some text in there that basically references the reason we have these two primary recommendations is because the criteria led us there. Mm-hmm. And we recommend that anybody else looking at this question refer to the criteria. They're good criteria. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So is
Rob. I want to make sure that we don't de-emphasize the two funding sources that we spent a lot of time identifying and recommending. And I think looking at the language of House Bill 2404 makes clear that we need to identify and make recommendations with respect to alternative suitable funding sources. And that's what we're doing. And we laid out our reasoning, and the legislature, of course, can do what it wants to do with those recommendations. But I think they deserve the emphasis we're giving them in our report.
Okay, Paul? I was just wondering, in light of what number three says versus the conversation we're having, if Jim O has got, sounds like you've already been done doing some wordsmithing, is that going to be incorporated into item three?
Yeah. Yes.
So do you have some potential wording there? I mean, could we say something like, you can do a lot better than I can, Jim, but, you know, the task force spent considerable time reviewing alternatives, and those alternatives were ran through a significant process of evaluation criteria to come up with these two. This is our recommendations to you, but we fully understand that the legislative process is a legislative process, but here's our recommendations, or something like that, so that we put the emphasis on our work, but also leave the door a little bit cracked to say we understand, you know, what reality is with terms of legislative process. We hope you use these, but you may modify to something else. Is that, was I being too crass there? Or?
No, I think from staff's perspective, we would agree with that kind of approach. If there's one disappointment from the meeting, it was the suggestion that we de-emphasize. And we spent a lot of time, as Senator Whitsitt has noted, on these alternatives, and it would be a shame to have them not receive the attention they deserve.
Mark, it's Doug Whitsitt.
Senator, go ahead.
I think it should be emphasized that whatever source of funding the legislature would come up with would be a sustainable source of funding. And that's when this task force went through 100 different sources, first it had to be adequate, and then it had to be sustainable, and so forth. If you look at this, about 214 new FTE, the cost is somewhere in the ballpark of $43 million. That's assuming it's $200,000 per biennium per FTE, including salary, other payroll expenses, service and supplies, office, and so forth. So that's about the kind of the rule of thumb. So there's $43 million there. And the cost of those employees will increase about 7% of biennium. So if you do the math, within 6 years, it's going to cost another $10 million. So it will be self-defeating unless the source of funding is, you know, keeps up with the cost. And that was the emphasis I think this task force put on the two precise recommendations, because both of those are designed to follow the cost curve upward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why we did the percentage.
Yep, good point. Very good point. I see a lot of heads nodding in here, Senator, agreeing with you. So, okay, any other comments on Task Force Charge 1? So Jim is taking notes, and we'll incorporate the comments into those. So.
And this particular document will circulate back right away. Captured things correctly.
And my hope is that we would at least sign that today, given that those changes would be made, unless you feel that, well, no, I've got to see it before I can sign the concept document in support. So, okay, I'm assuming then that everybody is okay, can live with the 9 recommendations as revised with Jim's notes. So, okay. Got green card. Well, let's do that. Yeah. Let's just make sure. You got your cards? Please hold them up. Mike, what we're doing is we have a green card if you're totally supportive. Yellow card is, I can live with it, but I got some reservations. And red is no way, no how. Okay, we're pretty much there. We've got it all the way around. I'm red-green colorblind, so it looks like almost everything's green. So. And a little yellow.
Yeah, yep. With the yellow.
With a little
yellow.
With
the caveat that we gave earlier.
Okay, thank you. Mike, do you have a comment on yours?
Well, I've been trying to figure out when and where to interject this, but, you know, I've spent a lot of time talking to sort of the man on the street. I interact with the public a lot, and I spend a lot of time on the water, and I spend a lot of time outside. And, you know, I was the original author of the proposal for the surcharge, and it was exceptionally important that the deductibility of the license fee be included in that. And so without that, I can't recommend or support the surcharge. So it's that simple, and that's
okay.
And that's been the general consensus of people that I've spoken to.
Yeah, we had a lot of discussions at the meeting about pros and cons of that, and Paul, I think, is in that same camp. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on to task two. Develop recommendations on whether funding adjustments are necessary to ODF&W program areas.
Mark, so, you might want to just check with the people on the phone.
Oh, on the phone. I'm sorry. Yeah, on the phone, did we have support for that with the modifications for the 9 recommendations? On the phone. Nita.
I'm not a voting member, so it's unimportant, but I never sign anything until I read it.
Yeah, Ketta, are you still on?
I am on.
Okay.
My card would be yellow. Again, I still have reservations about the income tax surcharge.
Okay.
And the same with me.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Let's move to number two then, task force recommendation two.
And let me explain the organization of this. So this was the task about program adjustments. And if you recall, we've received some comments that perhaps we weren't addressing this to the same level of detail as task one. And we've talked about that a number of times here. About what was expected of us in this short time frame that we've had to put together our recommendations. But one thing we've added is on page 2 at the top, staff has recommended that there be some kind of ongoing process that monitors the implementation of the conservation fund to make sure it indeed meets the objectives that we've established. So whether that be additional task force or whatever, we didn't. We've never specifically talked about that as a group, but staff is recommending that. And then we added some caveat language here to explain why we're not going into the same level of detail as some folks would like with program adjustments. But what we would point out is that everything here is a program adjustment. This is all direction to the department to expand its efforts in 3 areas, its conservation efforts, improving hunting and fishing efforts, and in outreach and public education efforts, as well as addressing deferred maintenance. So for each of those 4 key objectives that you'd identified for the funding, one thing we've noted is how much of the funding would go to that. And then we pulled out what we saw were the most significant recommendations for each of those 4 areas.
Okay, comments?
Yes, sir. Jim. I think it's important to note there that there's still a requirement for this to be done. And that in general, when folks have asked me about what we're doing and what they would like to see done, it falls under the category of adjustments to programs. And that's also been the most common thread in what I've heard from public comment at these meetings. So while we haven't looked at it and don't have the time to do so, it still needs done. And an expansion of all these programs isn't necessarily a solution if it's just more of the same, which is not something that satisfies a lot of sportsmen that are out there.
And I'd like to, as a chair, I'd like to comment on that. I agree with you, Jim, but I don't think that's our role. I mean, our role is to provide that funding, and it's up to the commission and the legislature to decide how to implement that. We've asked the department to give us specifics on, if you had this funding, where would it go? So the FTEs, the dollars for deferred maintenance, all those kinds of things. And then it can be scalable. The legislature can scale it. But if somebody says, well, I'd like to see a change in this area or this area, I just don't see that as that's our role. I mean, that's up to the legislature, who provides the budget for the agency, to decide, well, we're going to move this money here because we think that the agency needs to do this, or the commission can do some policy changes that might affect how it's the staffing is provided. But I just don't see, that's not our role, is to dive into that much detail of, well, this is the only way we can do this is if you change this program to this. I just don't see us being able to do that. Is that fair, Roger or Kurt or Chair Findlay?
Well, yeah, short answer is yes. The longer answer is, depending on what the issue is, we could have a whole other task force debating, for instance, if it was predator management or aggressive predator management, we'd have a whole other task force process that would be, I would say, more difficult than this one. So I think there's a lot of interests that aren't necessarily in this room that are would need representation as we talk about some of these other programs. And I just picked that one as a example. There are many examples.
And I don't disagree with any of that. I just want to take this time to point out that it is still a requirement. It's a job that needs done, and we can't just say, well, that's the job of the legislation or the commission, and hope that it gets done. It was lined out in 2402 in language as far as I see it, but you know, we're not going to get to it, but it still needs done.
Thanks. I think the Cattlemen's Association had that same concern when I met with them. So, yes, Jim.
My own view is we're not ignoring the responsibility to do program adjustments. We're just making decisions about the macro versus the micro program adjustments. I think what we're saying is we don't have the horsepower, the time, or frankly, the interest most of us to debate micro program adjustments. Should more money go into predator control and less money into general conservation? What about landowner relationships? All the hundreds of things that might be adjusted. What we're saying is, with the amount of time that we have, the biggest focus of program adjustments is the thing that jumps out is, number one, we've got a funding model that won't continue to work. And number two, we've got a conservation strategy that's not being implemented. So let's figure out a funding model that has a better chance of continuing to work long term, and let's add fully implementing the conservation strategy. And if somebody else wants to do more minor program adjustments, there's still mechanisms through the legislature and through the policy making of the commission and through the administration of the department. Those avenues and those doors are still open for interest groups to weigh in. They think this would be a little better balance of the department than that would be, and others can weigh in thinking, no, don't do that. That's creating more problems than it's solving. So I think we are trying to address our job in program adjustments. It's just we're trying to do it at the macro level. The two biggest problems, the sustainability of the funding model, and the fact that we've got a giant conservation program that's not being implemented because it can't be funded.
Thank you. Okay, Rob?
I have one minor comment on paragraph one and then a more significant comment on paragraph 11. In paragraph one, I don't think we should imply that we think another task force is the only appropriate way to proceed. And that may be the legislature's a choice of an avenue, but I don't think it's the only way, and I don't think we really need to make a recommendation about how they conduct their process. in paragraph 11.
So excuse me for interrupting. So would you propose just deleting paragraph 1 then?
No, I wouldn't delete paragraph 1. I would simply I would say perhaps
establish a process or
perhaps an additional task force. I would delete the words "an additional task force."
Okay.
In paragraph 11.
I'm sorry?
Transport.
Well, I'm thankful staff didn't recommend a continuation of this task force.
There is a typo there. It says somebody was thinking the Trask River there because it says Trask.
I caught that.
Okay, got it.
So, I joked about weekly meetings.
In paragraph 11, unless I missed it, we really haven't heard the evidence that the additional fishing opportunities need to include an expansion of stocking of fish. And I haven't been part of that conversation. Maybe another work group was. But I would simply change this to say develop specific programs providing additional fishing opportunities and leave it to the department to decide what those programs are, rather than to say that they need to include expanded fish stocking, because I haven't seen the evidence that that's necessary.
Mm-hmm. Anybody can't live with that recommended change?
Or word change.
Yeah.
Well, I was actually pleased to see the word stocking in there. You know, again, part of the dilemma, you know, increasingly sportsmen are feeling disenfranchised by the agency. You know, the Columbia River reform is a great example. We've just been shown a letter here by major sporting groups in the state indicating their unhappiness with what appears to be disinterest and disregard for the agency's core constituency. And one of the issues, you know, is there seems to be, you know, an increased reduction of opportunity as the years go by. There seems to be an increased attack on hatchery programs, on stocking programs. And those equate to opportunity. They equate to fishing opportunity. I think it would be really important that there's an interest in these stocking programs, that there's an interest in creating opportunity. You can't just say you're going to create opportunity and not talk about how you're going to do it. We need to create more fish. We need to create more fishing opportunity. I think stocking is an important word, and I think it should be left in there.
Would a compromise be emphasis on providing additional fishing opportunities that may include such things as additional fish stocking? In other words, gives examples.
I'd like to see expansion of hatcheries.
Okay, so Representative Helm and then Jim.
Mike, I appreciate your comments. And I think that the organizations that are involved in particularly in sport fishing, and they range from all different sorts of species, trout, bass, other warm water species, and then our anadromous fish as well. There's a tremendous amount of controversy around hatcheries right now, just to whether they're needed, how much we fund them, whether there are better ways to manage certain watersheds. And I'd hate to wade into that with this document too heavily. You may find areas where folks can agree that increased stocking of trout might be a good thing. But particularly on our coastal hatcheries, there's significant disagreement about how we should be managing certain watersheds. And it very well may be that we can manage those watersheds better, get more fish, and do it more cheaply without a hatchery on the river. So I don't want to foreclose that creative thinking because, again, if that is the case, and some people argue that, that's good for the department's overall budget if they can save money doing things like this. So I'd offer caution there.
Okay. Jim?
Well, I agree with Rob. I think we should not put hot points of controversy in this that are going to divide our constituencies. A lot of the wordsmithing of this particular aspect and actually some adjustments in funding resulted from the discussions in the work group, where basically there was a lot of concern in the conservation community that we're going to be putting general taxpayer dollars forward and we're going to be basically increasing stocking. And that created a lightning bolt of controversy, which we're trying to avoid here. And so I don't want to stick any lightning bolts of controversy. I like the language about leaving the program developments to enhance hunting and fishing up to the department without basically highlighting things.
So I think it was Claire, Jim, and then Roger.
Yeah, I agree with Rob and Jim and Representative Helm. Just to avoid hot button issues like this, and I think this is one. And when I've been meeting, and actually used to work at the City of Portland with the Science, Fish, and Wildlife team, I know one of the things that they're more interested in doing is they're definitely supportive of bringing more urban and kids out to fish and give them that exposure in an urban setting. But they're trying to do it through habitat restoration. And avoid the stocking issues. So again, if we avoid the hot button issue, I think that would be advisable here.
James?
Frankly, I'm with Mike on this, and especially since we're talking about the emphasis on fishing opportunities in urban and underserved communities, you know, the way to do this is with fish in an enclosed water system. You're talking about a pond or a small lake or a reservoir. Something that's got a fish gator or weir on it, and stocking it is tremendously important. And no matter how you feel about anadromous stocking, when you're talking about kids fishing in a pond or somebody in a city being able to access something to fish, stocking is absolutely the solution for that with the tools that we have. In the efforts to help out urban and underserved communities, I think that this is important and this is the way to do it.
Okay. Roger?
So just to explain, the focus of that particular effort is to provide those opportunities in an urban environment or where there are not current fishing opportunities. And the intent was to provide, again, increase those opportunities. That was the focus of that. Stocking would be one way you do that, through development of ponds and other enclosed water bodies there that provide that opportunity. And it would be trout stocking. This would not be salmon or steelhead. You know, that clarification wasn't in this short summary. I just want to provide that as the background on where that came from.
So maybe reverse the wording a little bit to see if we'll see if this works. Reverse the wording. Emphasis would be placed on additional fishing opportunities in urban and underserved communities that include this stocking in those areas. That's what your point is, I think. Okay.
Could I get in that queue?
Sure.
Meryl?
Go ahead, Meryl.
Thanks. I am in support of having some sort of oversight committee. I think that's really important given what I heard from Audubon chapters and other stakeholders, more accountability and transparency. Metro has an oversight committee for their funding strategies. So it doesn't have to be a task force, but it does, in my view, have to have some oversight from a wide variety of stakeholders. So I would like to see that in it. So thank you for that. Couple of other things. Number five, increased efforts to restore healthy ecosystems. It just doesn't... that doesn't sit right with me, because if the ecosystem was healthy, why would you need to restore it? So I don't know if there's just some word playing there. I guess maybe increased efforts to restore degraded ecosystems to help. The other thing is I see expansion used, the expand word, but I don't see improve and increase, and I would like to see those words used, because expand could be more of the same. I think I heard that comment is, are we just putting more money in expanding programs without really looking at them and improving them? And then finally, my question is for number 22. I'd like more clarification about what a strong human resources program is, and does that really describe accurately what we were talking about in terms of building an internal culture and the capacity within ODF&W to provide leadership opportunities for new young people of color. To me, that doesn't really describe what we spend a lot of time talking about.
Okay, thanks. Well, let's take these one at a time. Let's first close the loop on the fish stocking, and then we'll come back to improve and number 5 and 22. So, Bruce?
Sorry, I thought you were going through the whole thing.
Mine is not fish stocking, so you can put me at the back of the line here.
Okay, so let's see if we can close the loop on the fish stocking. So, you know, Roger's point is that we're talking about the emphasis in urban and underserved communities, and that it appears that in those areas, fish stocking is the primary purpose of that. We're not talking about the rest of the state. So if we change the wording a little bit to say in those urban underserved areas, we want to expand fishing opportunities that include such things as fish stocking. Would that be okay with everybody? Okay. I'm seeing head nods around the room. I'm seeing green cards on the phone. Are we okay with that? Okay, so that deals with number 11. So now let's go back, Merrill, to number 5, increase efforts to restore healthy ecosystem. Merrill's kind of wondering, well, what's that in there for? So, Jim?
I think that we should keep, you know, restore degraded ecosystems, but if they're healthy, then it just seems like an anomaly to me.
So do you have some proposed wording there, Merrill?
I'm looking back at this. I think we could just work degraded.
Or can we just say, Merrill, this is Nancy, could we just say increased efforts to restore ecosystems to health?
Sure. Or resiliency, sure.
Or resiliency, or, yeah.
Okay. I'm seeing head nods yes around the room. So, Merrill, you had mentioned that putting in the word improved. Where would you propose that instead of where we talk about expand? Would you?
I would just include improve, like for number 2, expand and improve, or improve and expand the agency's conservation efforts.
Okay.
And everywhere we have expand, I would just add improve, so that we're not just building for the sake of building. We're making it better.
Okay.
And it's very clear.
Got it. Everybody okay with that? On number 2, we'd put expand and improve.
I think she's saying on all of them that have expand.
Yeah.
Right, Merrill, like 6 and yeah. 7 as well. 13,
is that what you're saying
14.
On all of them, Merrill?
Yeah, because it also speaks to maybe it was Jim or somebody else from the task force that talked about, you know, just putting money into the agency for the heck of putting it in. I mean, that's not what we are doing, and that's not what we want to convey that we're doing. We want to improve what we're doing and expand what is working.
Okay. So maybe expand / improve? Because there's
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Sorry?
I agree with that because in some cases you could almost replace the word expand with improve. But if you didn't expand / improve, then people can take it as they want to.
Yeah. Okay, so expand / improve. Okay. And then number 22, Merrill, you said build an internal culture, the capacity to improve connections, diverse and underserved communities through a strong human resources program. Well, what was your comment on that one?
I don't know what you mean by strong human resources program.
So,
yeah, and I don't really have some language, but I did notice that in the line items, you had one FTE for an equity and diversity program coordinator, and one person for an entire agency is not necessarily going to be a measure for success.
Okay, Jim, you have a...
Yeah, the challenge of shorthand here. So,
I know, I understand, yeah.
Yeah, so there were, in the report, there's a number of recommendations on how to institute a stronger human resources program for the department focusing on cultural diversity. And so this was just a shorthand for that.
Maybe this is the best thing. I'm just going on the record for wanting to be clear about what this means. And if you're saying that that's what your response is clearer to me than what I'm reading here. Okay. So
okay.
I can live with that now.
You can build it up.
Okay. So Jim said he could go with that.
Yeah, a dedicated human resource
dedicated
program.
Yeah, like,
instead of strong.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Merrill.
Thank you.
Any other comments on task two? Oh, sorry, Bruce.
Yeah, and mine, going back to the paragraph one, the process issue there, I just took issue with the phrase for a more detailed review. And I don't think that's the need. That's a scope of work that we weren't able to get to, and I'm not sure is any task force job here. The important part for me is for ongoing review to make sure that it's consistent with the purposes, more of an adaptive management. Ongoing independent review is the point there in my mind. So
ongoing independent review?
Yeah, I think what we want here is an oversight process. So, you know, a whole lot more money is coming to the department for specific purposes that you've articulated. But the idea is that there's an oversight of that.
So,
this is Doug.
Go ahead, Senator.
As you know, the task force knows I have been concerned about the lack of specificity along here, but I mean, even in macro budgeting, unless I'm missing something, if you pay for the FTE at around $43 million, and if you take, we don't really know what they're going to do, but there's 43 there, and there's $9.6 million for deferred maintenance, and we don't know what's going to be maintained. For instance, much of that money is deferred maintenance is in hatcheries, and then you hear from this conversation, many people here don't like hatcheries, so are we going to fix the hatcheries or not fix the hatcheries? And then even that comes out to $52.6 million. You've got the $13 million that you backfilled the two licensee leases, and that really is a lack of transparency in accounting because those actually aren't costs until the fees go up. But even if you take that off, we're still about $21 million short of where we're going to spend it on.
Well, we have the spreadsheets where the agency specifically identified the FTEs by category where they would spend the dollars if it was provided. So that's where the devil's in. In the detail.
I appreciate that. I appreciate the detail on the FTE, but I mean, after you paid for the FTE and the services supplies and all these other line items, we're still about $20 million short of specificity on what we're going to spend it on.
Okay. I'm not sure where to go with that discussion. So we've got Kenji and then Bruce and then Jim.
So as Merrill was saying, and Bruce, you mentioned this about the review process and its importance. Merrill was saying that wherever there's expanded, there should also be improved. Perhaps you add the word review too. So it's because if you want review to place that at such a high importance, I think it should be part of our language that we used in 2 through 7 or wherever there's expand, because you first want to review because there might be some, for example, laws that aren't worth keeping around anymore. So a review would be very important.
Okay.
Yeah.
I hear Merrill agreeing with that. The rest of the task force?
Yeah.
It's fine.
Okay. Sounds good. Bruce and then Jim.
I may have lost track of that there. I think Senator Witz had raised the question about $20 million.
Well, I wasn't. Yeah.
And I think part of it is deferred maintenance is about $10 million, and there's a grants program in there for $12 million, $9 and $12. That may account for that. That was just my quick reading in the spreadsheet.
Yeah, that's right. There's $9.6 million for deferred maintenance. Conservation grants is $12 million. And then the rest is essentially FTEs. There's some business services, but it's minor business services, yeah, but that's mostly where it is. Yeah. Thank you. Jim? You had your card up. Oh, okay. Okay.
Stop chasing rabbits and go after the elephant.
Yep. So, everybody okay with the revisions? Just hold your cards up with revisions and task force assignment number two with the modifications that we proposed. Okay. So, on the phone, we have almost all green cards, I think. Is there green cards on the phone with the voting members? Got to hear a yes. Merrill?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, great. Now let's move to task force assignment number three, identify and recommend opportunities for leveraging, coordinating, and budgeting of funds from alternate and existing sources and existing. That's, they've got a double word there. From alternate and existing sources, period. So we have six recommendations there.
And again, in the report, there's much more detail about who this partnership might be with, what funds can be leveraged. This is just a shorthand summary. Okay.
Cards up, then, if we don't, I don't see any proposal changes. So cards up. Okay, and voting members, we're all green on the phone. Are we green? Okay, well, we've got a final review of the proposed recommendations. Let's see, do we want to move? Jim, do you want to have any discussion regarding the surcharge? I think we.
This is where we ended up after your last meeting. Christine helped us hone in on the numbers. If you recall, last meeting we were looking at two different funding levels. We agreed on the $86.9 million, so we've been able to simplify all the numbers. There aren't a whole lot more spreadsheets to look at anymore.
And then the beverage surcharge, we believe that the numbers are about as accurate as we're going to possibly get. So that's what the funding shows. So we're now, I think you can take all of this to the bank that this is what the numbers would show. So okay. I think we're ready to move into strategies unless there's anything else. Is that correct?
I have a quick question.
Sure.
Sorry, Miss last meeting. How did you land on $20,000 as the gross income that could be used for the income tax surcharge?
I think that was, Christine's here, but I think that's the cutoff for low income. Is that correct? Yes, she's nodding her head yes. That's the cutoff for low-income filers.
And did you review any numbers for income that was like at 30,000, 40,000?
Could you repeat that one more time?
I was wondering if you had reviewed what the numbers would have been for income, gross income that was at 30,000, for example. Or did you just do this one?
No, I didn't look at different scenarios. It was just less than 20,000. But the thing that could affect people at that income level is anyone who received the earned income tax credit would also be exempt from the surcharge. So it's possible to get the earned income tax credit with up to maybe $45,000 a year in income. With enough dependents and stuff, so those people are exempt. But I hadn't really analyzed different numbers. But 20,000 was the absolute cutoff.
That answer your question, Merrill?
Keta,
excuse me, Keta.
No,
sorry.
It was Keta.
All right, Keta. Yeah, did that answer your question? Did that answer your question?
That does answer my question. Yeah.
Okay, I think we're there. Okay, I'm going to assume that we are okay with the task force recommendations as modified. And so, Jim, before we move into the process for moving forward in our next 40 minutes or so, I'm hoping, and we haven't discussed this, but I'm hoping that we could at least sign the letter of concept today. Are you going to try to do that electronically?
I'm going to have to do it electronically because I left the office without taking it with me. I had sheets for each of you, and I left them without.
Okay.
Sorry.
There's no way to, while we're having the discussion, somebody could email them to Beth or somebody?
I can check on that.
Okay. Okay, let's now is, I think, one of the most important parts of our discussion, and that is the strategy for moving forward. I'm sorry, Kenji?
Can we make it official that we're moving the whole thing forward?
Okay, we can do that. We did it by various section, but we can. This is the document that is the summary document, and of course the devil's in the detail that Jim will provide. But let's show a show of cards that we are either green, yellow, or red on the recommendations as modified by the task force, that we would move forward and support that, at least the documents. So, okay, cards up, please. Have one yellow with a caveat, two yellows with a caveat, and the rest are green. So
on the phone?
On the phone. Do we have Ketta, green, yellow, or red?
I'm still yellow.
Okay, and Merrill, green, yellow, or red?
Green.
Okay, so we have three yellow, Alicia, and the rest are green. Okay. Great, thank you. Yeah, we're there. Okay, now, you know, I think I say this almost every meeting. We have done, in my opinion, really good work for a very diverse group of individuals that have strong interests in certain areas, and we've done a very good job of consensus building on a pathway to provide adequate, sustainable, long-term funding for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. So we've done our job. Now it gets to the legislature, and that's where the heavy lifts occur. Because as Senator Edward has told us many times, he's going to look out, well, not anymore, but he would have looked out in the audience and said, what kind of support do I have for these proposals? And so the lobbyists are in the room, the constituency groups are in the room. He says, this is not going to move forward if our constituency groups shoot it down, shoot the proposals down, and it's not going to go anywhere. And so, you know, the argument that I'm trying to make is that, do you want to see long-term sustainable funding for the Department of Fish and Wildlife? And clearly, this study from the citizens of Oregon in general say, yes, we support the Department of Fish and Wildlife. We may disagree on policy issues. We may disagree on this issue versus this issue, but we do agree that the agency needs to be adequately funded. And if we continue on the current pathway that we have, the agency's not going to be adequately funded, and the legislature's going to have a tough time finding the funding for that. So let's argue the policy discussions between the commission and the legislature, but the funding, we hopefully all agree that this is what we need to do. So the process that I think we need to have, or the discussion we need to have, is how do we move that forward with our legislative contacts, presentations that we would make, coalition building, coming together at the legislative session, be willing to come in and testify in support of the department's budget, whether it's a state police budget or ODF&W budget, you know, whether we're willing to step forward to do that. And so the discussion that I'd like to have is, how do we do that coalition building in that process? Because this thing's going to fall apart, in my opinion, totally, if we get to the legislature and there's not support for this, and our work, our 11 months worth of work will go down the tube for a lot of good work that we did. So I'd like to ask, maybe I'm putting Representative Helm on the spot here a little bit, but like, because you've been at almost every meeting, and you have been at least in my opinion, one of our strongest advocates for this process that we're using. And so I'd like to ask you for your advice first on how you see us helping you in the legislature to move this effort forward. Do you have any recommendations or advice for us that we can help do that?
Well, you are, thank you. You are putting me on a spot a little bit, and with a little bit more thought on this, I could be more helpful, and I promise to be so. Just though, a couple of real quick things. One is, I think one of the leading voices on promoting the work and promoting the solutions that you have come up with needs to come from the business community. It needs to come from the part of the state that's creating economic benefit and economic wealth for people, not just the manufacturers of equipment and guides and so forth, but every entity that benefits from having a healthy hunting and fishing economy. And also, the new prong that you've developed so substantially here, the conservation community too, the folks that kayak and birdwatch, et cetera. But coming at, we have a pretty well established lobby from the point of view of sort of conservation and environmental groups, and my colleagues are used to seeing those folks and used to hearing what they're talking about. But we're not so used to hearing from the business community saying a budget of this sort and the things that it can do for our state is important for Oregon's economy, and we're behind it. That's a message I think that'll reach a quite a broad audience. The second thing to do, I think, is have personal meetings with every legislator. And yet, don't let this get pigeonholed as a revenue committee problem or a ways and means problem or a subcommittee of ways and means problem. Get out to everybody as soon as you can. Those are the couple things that comes to my mind really quickly.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. So I'm going to also do this. I'm going to ask some of the members of the audience if you could be thinking a little bit too, if you have any advice for this task force as we move this forward on how we sell this to the legislature. And I've already given the lobbyists sitting in the back of the room back there a heads up that I was going to call on them. So if we could do that. But let's go around the room to see if there's any advice from folks. Senator Whitsitt, do you have any advice or counsel for us?
I think Secretary Helms was spot on. I mean, it's not just the environmental groups and the groups that support hunting and fishing. It's all Oregonians who are in favor of this, and it's and the committee has. Task force has ascertained that it would benefit all the people of Oregon. So you're going to have the business community on board, and above all, you're going to have the hunters and fishers on board. And that sounds like it might be problematic. But one of the good old rules in politics is you don't forget those who bring you to the dance. And the hunters and the fishers are the people who have supported this agency for the last since 1930s. I think that consistency is, whatever it takes to get that consistency on board will be the make or break of this task force.
Okay, thank you. And then there was a comment that I think it was Representative Witt made to us when we were chatting with him and Representative Barnhart. He recommended that we work with Representative Krieger, who has some, on the House side, on the Republican House side, to talk to some of his colleagues about the potential for moving through, because his contacts being a previous state police officer, but also on the Republican side of the House, that he could potentially help us there too. So, okay. We didn't. Well, yeah, Paul's asking me how did we go with meeting with the beverage lobby. That meeting didn't go real well because we didn't have a meeting with the beverage lobby. We offered at least twice, I think, and they refused to meet with us both times.
Oh. Okay. Wow. Well, that says something.
So that's how that meeting went. So. That's a pretty fair statement. Is that correct? So we're. I think Representative Witt. That was one of the questions that we asked him at the end of our meeting, and he was going to reach out to Mr. Romaine and see if we could possibly get a meeting with him. And so I think he was going to try to follow up using his input. And I'm meeting with the Farm Bureau. Roger and Jim and I are meeting with the Farm Bureau at their annual meeting coming up in December. It's going to be here in Salem, and so we're going to have an opportunity to meet with them. And I think we're attempting to get a meeting with the Association of Oregon Industries. Did we get that scheduled? The Association of Oregon Industries, did we get that meeting?
That is not scheduled. Rob has scheduled us with Oregon Business Association, Oregon Business Council.
Okay.
Jim and I are meeting with them on the 13th.
Okay. So, and then I'm going to be attending the Leadership Summit in Portland next week, I think it is, or the week after, next week. I'm going to be talking to some folks there, too, so try to open some doors there. Okay, so let's start around the room and talk about how would you recommend, as a member of the task force, either your personal involvement or strategy that we should use in helping to sell this. So let's start with Jim. You don't have to participate if you don't want to. So.
Well, I have a question about strategy in general, and that is one thing we learned from the survey is that the general public thinks this is a really important deal but doesn't understand there's a problem. So everything we've talked about in terms of strategy with the lobbyists so far sounds to me like kind of insider baseball in Salem, lobbyists and legislators, and the very traditional kind of low-key, quiet lobbying that happens when the session's happening. And the rest of the world isn't going to even know that this is a problem, or that we have gathered together and worked a year, or that we have a solution, and that we've all agreed to the solution. So my question is, what's the outreach strategy through the media or through social media or through all of our groups reaching our constituents to kind of educate people that there is a problem and we have a good solution for the problem? Now, if our insider baseball lobbying all is successful, we solve the problem and you don't need a public campaign. But what happens if it's not successful? What happens if we have to turn our attention to going for a ballot initiative, for example? Everybody out in the real world is not even going to know that this was a problem or was even discussed. I mean, all the people who are represented by the survey. So it just seems to me like one of the missing elements here is, what's our broader public communication strategy? And do we just not have one and put all of our chips on this upcoming session? Or do we have the pressure of the public responding to that campaign also leaning on the legislators to get this thing solved, or there'll be an initiative?
So is your point is in form of a question, or are you really saying we need to
I'm
have...
not saying we need it.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. I'm right... challenging the thinking here that we can get all this done by just having the lobbyist and the insider legislative advocates take our report and salute and come up with $96 million a biennium. It'll be okay. I just challenge that.
Okay, because right now I think the strategy is we're talking to the interest groups, the constituencies, and interest groups that don't normally deal with ODF&W, like AOI or Oregon Business Council and some of
right.
those. So, yeah, and your point is you need to expand that.
I think even assuming that AOI and we do have a business voice that says this is important, that's important news.
Nancy?
Well, yeah, I mean, actually, my thinking was, or my question was more exactly what you're saying, Jim. I was kind of wondering what the sequence of that was, because I don't feel like this is, there is any general information out there or even concern. I don't think generally the public understand the issue. And I don't know whether, you know, I didn't jump to we needed that, but I do have a question of the sequencing and how we reach that general audience and when is the right time, depending upon what approach we want to take. If we're focused on the legislative approach and we feel like we have the constituents that we need to move forward there, then maybe we don't need the general public to understand the need in the same way. But it seems like with that amount of money that the public understanding that there's a concern here and that conservation's not happening and that we need that is going to be an important piece of this.
Well, I appreciate the comments of Representative Helm and agree with those wholeheartedly. Also, I think that I agree with Jim that we need to do the problem statement, but I think we also have to have a better solution statement, and I think we need to look at Missouri again, where we might need to get more information from the agency and just get some more data points about what this money will do. I hear Senator Witz's concerns about the headcount, and I think we need to definitely develop some sort of response to that question with what are we going to do? What are the deliverables? What are the accomplishments? What is that going to create as far as a real benefit to hunters and fishers and conservation? Let's see if I had some other stats here. I think we should learn from 99. This survey is sort of how we started with 99, by understanding that it was just a widely supported initiative, and that what, even despite Oregonian calling against it, despite certain legislatures going against it, fairly organized, it passed. So I think the people of the state have some clout in getting them organized in a way to let the legislature know that they need to get on board, or else they're going to be forced into something they may not want to deal with, could help and could build leverage. And I think that's really our second, our last thing, is we got to figure out what our leverage is, because if we have none, then we have no hope to get it through.
I don't see the downside in looking at a public outreach program that can be done in concert to the constituent group conversation. I think that there's been an excellent start made on the materials that have been created to date. When you look at the mission of protecting and enhancing our fish and wildlife and their habitats for enjoyment by future generations, it's a very positive statement. It's a very attractive statement. It's magnetic. You know, if you say you don't want to be part of that, then you're a very special person. I think that it's a wonderful thought. It's an aspirational thought, and I think it's a thought that will resonate with Oregonians beyond the legislature and beyond the constituent groups. I also think that this notion of an Oregon Conservation Fund, which is a new way for us to be talking about this solution, also has a very positive ring to it. And when we look at the example of what Missouri's done, is they've done excellent branding for the last 50 or 60 years. They've talked about themselves with regards to conservation, and it doesn't feel like a government entity or agency. It feels like something that's very more consumer friendly. And I would it's come up a couple times in the course of our meetings where perhaps the department should seriously consider it, changing the way they talk about themselves and how they name themselves and what they really are. So I think that the Oregon Conservation Fund and that kind of wording would be positively received in a public message.
Bruce?
I don't have a lot to add. I think Jim's point and been echoed about the more public campaign here. And our problem, of course, is we were all appointed here not to represent particular organizations, but to be representative of some interests. None of us has an organization that can single-handedly lead a campaign here, which sort of takes us back to the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I don't know what constraints other than your lack of capacity you have, but this is a landmark report from a first-time ever task force for this purposes, and to the extent that the department can really market that and try to make a splash. From a media standpoint, I don't know who else is really in a position to do it. And I understand the constraints you're operating under there, and you don't want to politicize things unduly here, but I don't see anybody else being in a position to get the products out as widely as the department can.
Roger's cringing as well. Looking at
taking notes.
Rob?
Well, I think we need a ground game, and we don't have a ground game for this at all. I agree with some of the comments that were made. Jim made some comments about needing to have a broader outreach, and we're nowhere near the organization quality of Measure 99 or Measure 76 with respect to parks and natural resources, and we do need some kind of campaign effort to recognize those were both initiatives, but we need some kind of campaign effort with the legislature and with the general public. I think in the legislative session, we're going to get lost. We're not part of the $1.7 billion shortfall. They're going to be preoccupied with that. Their priorities are going to be established dealing with revenue and budgets, and we're going to get lost among those priorities if we don't have a ground game. And I don't know if this committee is the right place to put it together, but I would like to hear the lobbyists who are in the room speak to this, because they deal with this professionally. I also would like to hear where the governor's office is on this. We haven't heard. I'm sorry that Jason left, but I think we could use early support from the governor's office once we have a report that's produced and delivered to the legislature.
Yeah, I agree with Rob's comments there that I think our timing is going to be really bad with this coming out. The governor's budget is probably going to be released sometime next week or something like that, and all the wailing and gnashing of teeth is going to begin about cuts to education and cuts to public safety and cuts to social services and fish and wildlife. Unfortunately, as much as I love it and we all love it here, is just not going to become a crisis in that, to the point that, you know, it's going to rise to the top, and I think we're just coming into the perfect storm of this budget cycle, with it being a bad time to try to raise revenue for what we're trying to do here.
Do you have an idea?
I don't.
Okay.
I think that the timing is bad. The idea of campaigns and additional public outreach, what little outreach I've seen, there's been a couple of minor media stories about it, but it really hasn't hit the nail on the head in terms of the need. And until the conservation community and everyone else, you know, starts to fan the flames of the fact that we have a crisis of some sort, and I don't think we're at the point where we can honestly say that there's really a crisis here, that like the one that's going to be facing education, human services, and the rest of these things, it's not going to rise to that same level of crisis management that the legislature then will turn around and say, oh, gee, we've got to do something about that.
Mm-hmm. So I think, let's see, OPB, Bill Monroe, and I think the Ben Bulletin did, but there hasn't been a lot of, like you said, there hasn't been a lot of. James?
As far as hunters and fishermen are concerned, if you're going to sell this, and whether it's going to cost them through beverage tax or income tax, they're paying another $30 or $70 a year, it needs to be abundantly clear that money is going to be in lieu of the two proposed fee increases. That it's looking at getting rid of the Columbia River Basin endorsement, and that there's a tangible and quantifiable increase in opportunity for hunting and fishing. If you don't have the support of those recreationalists who have been funding the agency thus far, I don't see this working.
Yeah, I think I agree with just about everything I've heard. And just another take on this, I think that if we, I think we do need some sort of a campaign. The public definitely needs to know about this. And I think if we just frame it simply as funding an agency, as opposed to funding conservation, education, recreation, that's going to be a problem, and we're not going to grab the attention of the public that is really necessary if the legislators who are in the position to do something with this, with these recommendations, then I think we are in big trouble. So I think framing this to the public in terms of education as what we do to implement and get to the mission of the agency is really critical. Funding an agency just that'll get lost in the budget cycle and the hearings. I think also it's going to be important to, I think it's more appealing to fund Oregon Conservation Fund. And again, it's because maybe ODFW is the vehicle, but in our recommendations, you know, we're talking about partnerships, we're talking about grants, we're talking about expanding the ability of an agency to get the mission accomplished. The other thing I would say is that recognizing that it's not only the hunters and anglers, but the conservation community, and getting them to recognize that there is a crisis and that they have a willingness to pay and do their share to, so it's not just on the backs of hunters and anglers. I think that's going to be really critical. And again, I think that goes to the messaging. If the conservation community, the people I've talked to, if it's just about funding an agency, they may not be there for us. And so I think that we need to frame this in terms of what the vision really is. So I'll leave it at that.
Carrie?
So I think in terms of the hospitality industry, which is a really broad industry made up of a lot of different kinds of businesses, mostly very small and medium-sized businesses and spread throughout the state with over 100,000 employees. The nexus to the topic is really strong, and I think the industry definitely recognizes the economic importance of a healthy state ecosystem, both on the conservation side and on the consumptive side of the resource, and I think that we could build some strong advocates from the hospitality industry on this topic. The concern is going to be that we're not aligned, and the industry is going to not want to get between conservationists and hunters and fishers. We're going to want to be supporting the guides and the fishers and hunters, and if they are not on board, that's going to be a big concern for the hospitality industry because of our alignment with that part of the industry set. So that's my biggest concern, that we aren't at a place where, even though sports fisher persons and hunters would be participating, that they don't see a benefit in rolling back those future fee increases and just the benefit overall at the influx of the 86 million, 87 million that we're looking to raise, what that does to grow the greater pool, the reluctance to come forward to support gaining that money because they're having to pay a little bit more. I totally understand the push, but I think it's going to be hard to get the advocacy we need if we are not all aligned moving the recommendations forward. That's my biggest concern. Otherwise, we're in. We'll help get it done.
Okay, thank you. Chair Finley?
Well, I agree specifically with Jim Martins and Rob and Paul. James said something earlier that reminded me of the growth of young people. With my own grandson, I find when I'm teaching him to fly fish, there needs to be a reward. And stocking in ponds lead to that reward as opposed to just practicing on the lawn with the barbless hook. I have been wont over the years when I was looking to recruit board members for various nonprofits to go look up the annual reports from successful nonprofits in the same field and recruit retired board members. It's not stealing board members because they're retired, but they have earned a reputation. They know how boards work, and in these cases, they know how to raise money. So I'm really intrigued by the mechanisms and the guts of Measure 99. I don't know anything about it. I voted for it, so did my wife. But I think there's some lessons to be learned about, and Scott, I think you focused right in on this, from these people, to give us a more of a ground game, a campaign. I agree we don't have that. Claire talked about it's more than funding an agency. I think you've all heard me say many times that the non-game or watchable wildlife part of ODFs and Ws is virtually non-existent, although that's a mandate from the legislature in both other statutory legislation and, again, in 2402. We know statistically from license sales, most Oregonians don't hunt and fish. But we also know from our own survey they care deeply about natural resources. They care deeply, and they actually, the word was in their ecosystem function, the interrelationships of healthy ecosystems and what they provide to you, whether you're a canoeist, whether you're a climber, a hiker, an angler, or a hunter. I think we have to work on a campaign learning from 99 how to reach out. And they're not boxed in convenient packages. Over the years, I have tried to do various initiatives, and I remember there are ways to reach various thought pools. I remember when I was the superintendent of the Everglades and trying to expand the park, I did over 500 rotary programs throughout the state of Florida. It was the days of a Kodak carousel before PowerPoint, but nevertheless, the program committees of various groups were always looking for a speaker. If you ever had that job, you know how thankless it is. But I think there are some opportunities, whether it's the PTA, when we were pushing green schools. I went to the National Association of School Administrators and the head of the PTA. Now, I don't know what the PTA in Oregon was involved in on Measure 99, but that would be one of the lessons to be learned. And so I think some of us, or all of us, need to look at other constituents other than the ones that have been pointed out to as the regular folks we know that lobby on behalf of Fish and Wildlife or the Nature Conservancy. You know, I grew up fishing and hunting in Southern Oregon. Other than belonging to the Medford Gun Club, my father and I didn't belong to any group. But we cared deeply about habitat, and we cared deeply about the opportunity to hunt fish. There are people that hike, take their dogs out, rock hunt, love to be out in Oregon on BLM land. They still want to see fish and wildlife. They really don't want to see coyote skins hanging on a fence. There's an opportunity here, I think, to reach out. I'm not sure. I don't know how to do it. But it is that group of people that I think helped pass Measure 99.
Okay, thank you. Kenji?
Well, I think the person that Mike's trying to reach is a person like me. As you all know, I'm a bike racer. So when I first came to this committee meeting, ODFW, I had a vague idea of what it did and what it was. But having gone through this entire process, I've come to have a deep appreciation for the hunting and fishing community and also the conservation community too. And I learned a lot. And one of the things through this process is I came to the conclusion is that tax is not a four-letter word. And looking at this PowerPoint presentation that was created, it creates a fantastic framework in terms of framing your argument to whomever you go to, because you delineate a need quite well, and then you propose a solution. And that's really important, and that's what Claire really got to in terms of funding an idea rather than an agency. And that was absolutely perfect. The other piece I want to bring up too is this entire summary that we have is also an economic development tool, especially for rural Oregon that's sort of been left behind in a lot of the economic development that's happened recently. Because you bring out more hunters, you bring out more fishers, you bring out more bird watchers, it really helps them out tremendously. And it's also a quality of life issue too, which is a tremendous, tremendous driver of people coming into Oregon. And that's actually moving their businesses here too. Because if we didn't have the quality of environment here, people wouldn't be coming here at all. So I think finally what's important is just remembering the value that this agency and this conservation strategy and everything involved brings to our state. We just got to make sure that we get that out to our legislators and the general public.
Okay, thank you. Mike?
So, I mean, I think everybody in the room knows I'm pretty avid outdoorsman and fisherman and what have you, and I'm thinking about what we're supposed to be talking about as we go around the room, and I think what we're supposed to be talking about is strategy or how we move this forward. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the key criteria that we talked about in the very beginning was it needs to be, you know, have a broad interest base and ensure that nobody's ox got gored. I encourage everybody in this room to not underestimate the level of frustration with the agency in the sporting community. People are angry, they're frustrated, they're pissed off. And they want to see more action from the agency, they want to see more opportunity, and they don't want to hear about how it's going to cost them more money unless there's a definitive line that connects their money to opportunity, okay? And the guy whose ox is getting gored is the guy that's going to be in front of the legislature complaining, okay? I mean, the person that is going to derive some benefit is going to be hard-pressed to come to Salem during a session and sit in front of a legislature and advocate for something. But the guy whose ox is getting gored, he's going to get in front of a legislator. And I think that's the important thing to remember here in terms of formulating strategy. Bottom line is we've got to figure out a way, if we're going to move this thing forward, to bring the sporting community on board with this. And again, like I said, there's a lot of very upset people in the sporting community. How we do that in the short period of time between now and the session, I'm not sure. But you know, recent actions that generated this letter are not helpful. It's not helpful to what we're trying to do. So in terms of strategy, we really, really need to figure out how to bring the sporting community together and on board with this, because I'm afraid if we don't, we're dead in the water.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. Director, any comments?
I think it's all really been said. I would just add that nobody said it was going to be easy. And I don't think anybody here thought it was going to be. There's, you know, there's a lot of time between now and hopefully success, and a lot can change in that time frame. So I would encourage every one of you to at least maintain a degree of flexibility, because when it gets to the point where our distinguished representatives like Representative Helm are having to vote on these and to secure a 60% vote in both chambers, there may be some compromises that come about. But in the end, the bigger picture, the macro picture, is still worth it. But I guess I just want to, hopefully you all will remain flexible and keep your eye on the prize at the end. At this point, you know, we don't have a governor's bill related to this task force's work, and not sure if we're going to. So as the agency, we of course have to be really careful about lobbying on bills unless you know, governor's bills we obviously lobby on with full authority to support. If there's no governor's bill, we'll have to be a little careful and coordinate through the governor's office on any statements that we do or don't provide. We will, however, be, as always, engaged in providing the facts and helping tell the story.
Okay, thank you. On the phone? Any comments on the phone?
Sure. This is Keta. I appreciate the comments that have been made so far and agree with so much of what's been said. I think that I'd just like to add that, you know, I think that these are really tender and tumultuous times for a lot of folks, and that if we engage a diverse group of stakeholders and create ways for those stakeholders to find their place in a vision for this work, I think that that will continue to strengthen it. I think it's important to understand that you know, our growing diversity can strengthen our effort, and that people of color historically support conservation and environmental issues at higher rates than other voters, and that leveraging that growing strength in our state will be important over the long run. So engaging early there, I think, will be important. I also think that there's pretty low-cost, high-outcome ways of building the story, and I think continuing to kind of have an eye on trying to get the story told of the work that we're doing, but moreover, the work of OVFW in terms of other conservation efforts as well in the state. I think that there's opportunities to intentionally connect with Outdoor School for All efforts and to also help with that story and skill building. And it seems like there's also a need for conversations that really revolve around accountability and demonstrating strong visioning. I think that trying to be as positive and creating a vibrant, hopeful, and responsible platform will be really helpful in these times. And I also think there's a lot of opportunity to engage with upstream public health folks with this work, too.
Okay.
So I guess long and short of it is I think there's a lot of connectivity and opportunity that is out there before us.
Okay, thank you. Merrill?
Yeah, just very quickly, I agree with everything everybody has said, but in particular, having Governor Brown support this is really important, and finding out where she is. I think it's really important, and I'm concerned about the beverage lobby. I think that is a strategy. We've got to figure that one out, because I think the income tax only solution is not a winning strategy and is not going to get us where we need to go.
Okay, thank you. So lobbyists or anybody else in the room, do you have any advice that you'd like to share with us quickly?
Thank you. My name is Joe Rollator. I'm a lobbyist. I represent commercial fishermen on the ocean and a big trout farm in eastern Oregon, but I've been a citizen lobbyist for maybe 30 years. I've been here working on fish conservation issues. Before I get started, I want to recognize Amanda Rich. We had a committee of 10 or 12 people that came together as volunteers because we all wanted to fully fund the conservation part of ODFW, and we really didn't have a leader, and Amanda stepped up. She hasn't been here very much. I see she stepped in, but she's not here very much because she's really busy, but she kept us on track and on time. She made us come every week, whether we liked to or not. And she kept us focused on the idea that we were going to do conservation funding, and we were going to do it through ODFW's budget. Like I said, I've been here for maybe 30 years, and I've always had a really good friend at the legislature, Jim Myron, that was always a fish conservation representative, and he started out like a citizens lobbyist like me, and I represented the fishing community conservation. So I wanted to keep fish for us to fish, and Jim wanted to keep fish. And we've always had this discussion about the contribution that fishing and hunting fees make to conservation, and how much, and we've always argued about the magnitude, but we've never argued about whether it was a significant contribution or not. And there were four wishy-washy yellow votes here on this committee, and I think that's because we got down into the weeds about how much the conservation community and the fishing and hunting community put into the pot. Frankly, I think we ought to get off of that. We ought to just do what Myron and I always did, and that was not worry about those issues that somebody else is going to worry about. Cormorants, whether hatchery fish were good or bad. And we tried to get money into the Department for Conservation. I live on the coast. I have a little piece of land that's got 150-year-old timber on it. It's called Rollator Park locally. And I've tried to create a place for all those little fringe species. So there's Oregon pond turtles and Oregon red lake frogs that live on my place. And if you look at the maps of where species are, they don't exist on the Oregon coast. And so when they showed up on my place, I said, what do I do to enhance these guys? What do I do to make them stay here? Well, there was no information. And so I got interested in the conservation strategy just because I wanted a repository for the information that would keep those things going. And so my point is, just get off of how much everybody has already put into the pot. We need this money for conservation. The Oregon pond turtle and the red lake frog need it. And you guys stepped up to the plate. Us lobbyists stepped up to the plate. She led us, and we came up with a plan, and now let's just move on. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else like to provide some thoughts? Yeah. Come on, Bob.
For the record, Bob Reese with the Association Northwest Steelheaders. You know, all the themes have kind of been addressed here before. This is an authentic campaign, is what you guys are talking about. I don't think what has been talked about is whether this campaign takes place in the legislature, or if it fails in the legislature because there isn't a supermajority, or if you do not bring forward a perfect proposal that brings all stakeholders into it. This is going to go to the people of Oregon, which there is a great support for. So, and I think Joe was alluding to this, is that there has to be a single person or a single organization that takes the reins of the recommendation that comes from this task force and brings it to the public and builds coalitions and gains support from all different sectors of the Oregon stakeholder process. The Steelheaders were approached by a foundation to do exactly that for this exact issue. A lot of excitement has been generated on the national level because of the Blue Ribbon panel recommendation from the National Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies. This is a national trend. This is our fish and wildlife and natural resources are a gift that our entire nation embraces, even in this last election, there was a groundswell of support in areas that supported Donald Trump strongly for recovery of ecosystems, funding bond measures that recovered fragile and damaged ecosystems. So the momentum is there, whether it gets done in the legislature or whether it gets done in the general public. There has to be a single person in charge of this campaign, and it has to be. It's not going to get done on a volunteer effort, despite the passion that's been exhibited by this task force. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Tom?
First of all, I'm going to be very brief because, frankly, many
people introduce
yourself?
I know who you are, but I'm not sure everybody else does.
For the record, my name is Tom Wolf. I'm not a lobbyist, although I am registered as one. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited. Frankly, I'm not a very good lobbyist, but I'm an excellent testifier. I just want to say that having worked in 2010 on Measure 76 along with Bruce, I believe two things. One, I agree with Bob that we need to have a leader, but I don't think we need to have one. I think we can put together a coalition of leaders. We did with that Measure 76. We need a plan. Hopefully it can be done in the legislative session with a plan that goes forward with the bill, because frankly, I'm retiring on July 9th, 2017, and what happens after that, I don't care. But if it doesn't go forward with a legislative process, we need to put together a campaign for a ballot initiative. We need to have a coalition of groups. We need to have money. We need to do this. So I suggest that we put together a group of people, whether it's the lobbyists, whether it's people here, and we actually come up with a plan. We talk to the governor's office and see if the governor's office will support a bill or talk to legislators. And then we have a plan B. What happens if that bill doesn't go forward and we don't get, then we go to a ballot initiative. And I think that we need to have the lobbyists talk here. Maybe Chair Labhart can work with us, maybe Jim Owens. And we put together a group. We put together two plans, legislatively and ballot measure, and we go forward and we stop talking and we do. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Anybody else?
All right. My name's Adam Meyer. I'm with the Oregon Conservation Network. I wanted to thank everybody for all your time and work here. I know that it's been a challenging last 6 or 8 months that we've all been meeting, everybody in the back of the room and everybody with a seat at the table. I also know that the last few weeks have been really challenging on a lot of people, and the divisiveness across the country and in Oregon has been really challenging for a lot of people. As I sit here today, I see a lot of the good work that we've done, and I'm worried that some of that is falling apart, and I hope that that's not necessarily the outcome that has to come out of this. I think one of the most important things that we can remember is that all the times that we've done big things as a state or as a country, we've done things as a group, and there's a lot of people here who really wanted to come to the table and get things done. And I think we can. As a state, natural resources in the last 15 years has grown at a slower pace than any other issue area in the state in terms of funds and budgets. We've got a lot of making up to do, and I think that everybody here would benefit from new money and new resources. And I think an important thing to remember is that in the end, we're not here to let any one group benefit. We're here to benefit everybody. And that more money into natural resources from a general fund source, a general source, is good for everybody. There are details, yes, that matter. But oftentimes you can get stuck and hung up on those. And Joe was making a really good point that a few details have started to divide us. And I think that it's really important to stay at a higher level where we can agree because we're looking at a budget here that's $1.5 billion cut this next biennium if there's no new funding. In my understanding, based on the work that I'm doing, that means that there's going to be some money going towards health and safety issues related to the environment, air and water maybe, but everything else is probably going to get a cut, and that means probably this department and other departments that are really important to us. We have an opportunity here to come up with some new funding and to come together and figure that out, and I really hope that that folks keep their eye on that and remember that you know, there might be a few disagreements, but we really will all benefit if we move forward on something here. So thanks.
Thank you, Adam. Anybody else?
Chair and members of the task force, my name is Stephen Kafuri. I represent the Oregon chapter of the Wildlife Society. Those are wildlife biologists. Our membership includes folks who work for ODF&W, who work for federal agencies, who work for private companies, who are independent contractors. There are people who work on all sides of issues. What they try to do is to look at conservation through scientific lenses. I want to say something that we had some people come here very early on in this process from Missouri, and they made two really important points. One was, this is not a 2 or 3 month project, multi-year project. And the second point they made was, this was not a fish or a wildlife issue, a hunting issue versus a wildlife viewing issue. It's a conservation issue. And in fact, even as I remember, their agency is called the Department of Conservation. And I think we need to do everything we can do to separate, or to end the separation that we have now, that there's conservationists over here and there's hunters and fishers over there, because the things that need to be done out in the field benefit every Oregonian, regardless of whether you shoot the animals, whether you catch them on a camera. You both need the same kind of effort by the agency. And so what we do here is not good for animals or good, I mean, not good for people who consume animals or good for people who watch animals. They're good for the animals. They're good for the habitat. And that's the focus. I want to add a couple of quick things. Additionally, I think Claire hit it right on the head. Nobody ever raised money for an organization. Nobody wanted to vote for a department. You're voting for the animals and the critters and the habitat out there. And that's got to be the focus of any kind of campaign. And that's not something I'm not going to tell you about. I've done a lot of campaigning, and I do know that if you're going to run a school campaign, you don't say, give us money because we're having trouble. You say, give us money because we've got great opportunities. And people will vote for great opportunities. The outdoor school people didn't say, give us money because we don't have enough money and kids don't get to go to outdoor school. They said, give us money because look at all the kids that could benefit from an outdoor school. And I think the same message has to be here, and I think you do need to hire somebody professionally to help you develop that message. You can't do that with well-meaning volunteers. One way, and I think you ought to give this some serious thought, to allow yourself to have the time that I think is necessary to build a coalition is not to ask the legislature to pass a bill, but ask the legislature for a referral out to the people, which would give you enough time to have the folks in the back of the room here and the people that you've been talking to out in the community time to organize and to put out a message.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Anybody else?
Chair Labhart, members of the committee, for the record, my name is George O. Coolidge here on behalf of the Northwest Sport Fishing Industry Association. We represent the folks sort of in the middle. We always talk about the commercial industry, and then we talk about people who fish. We're sort of the business of the recreational side. So our members represent Cabela's, Fisherman's Marine, they represent guides, they represent tackle shops, manufacturers, across Oregon and in Washington. You asked the question about what sort of strategies we need to be looking at when we look to be, whether it be an initiative or whether it be passage of legislation. I can tell you our board last week did vote, and it was not an easy vote to put their name and their logo on the letter you got earlier, talking about their opposition right now to both proposals. And I say that it wasn't easy because I think they recognize that this department does need some additional resources. We were part of the original formation of House Bill, that committee that put together 2402. But there is some real concern, there is some real frustration right now about what that money would go to. And I can sort of speak back to the fee increase of 2015. One of the things that we heard from the department was that fee increase would cost, we could lose upwards of 10,000 license sales. And for our folks, that means people who buy rods and reels, guys who buy tackle, people who go out and enjoy our natural resources. So when we look at this increase, again, there's a very deep concern there about what is that going to mean for Oregon businesses? Is there going to be layoffs in this field? And so in terms of strategies moving forward, what I would encourage you to do is hopefully sort of narrow down with the department and the commission, you know, what some of this money will go to. When we talk about, you know, marketing opportunities, what are those marketing opportunities going to look like? I think our folks really would like to see some progress moving forward, seeing some opportunities where businesses will grow, where they can hire more people. You know, we like to talk about, you know, when the rivers are open and people are fishing, we hire more people stay on. These are good family wage jobs. So I would encourage you to sort of work with the department to sort of see what can be done to grow those opportunities, not shrink them.
Okay, thank you, sir. Anybody else? Amanda, you're going to have the last word because we're cutting into our time here. So,
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm Amanda Rich, and I represent the Nature Conservancy, but I'm really speaking more right now in just my capacity as Amanda Rich, a 20-year lobbyist and observer of the process. First, I do want to say thank you to everyone who has spent so much time learning, as you said, Kenji, and trying to dig into this problem. And I believe that the product itself is a great success, and the conversations it has given rise to, and I think some of the energy it has created, I believe will result in new resources for natural resources in some form or another. And I say that as prelude to my comment that I think that we have to, again, step back and then back a little bit further and then back one more step and get perspective on the very large picture of what this session is going to look like and how to make this conversation relevant within that context. And frankly, how to make investment in natural resources altogether, whether from an extractive view or a conservation view, from an agricultural production view to, the entire spectrum of natural resources. And frankly, what we do as a state to preserve them. If you look, preserve and frankly sustainably use them. If you look at the really large picture of the budget, natural resources is almost budget dust. It's a rounding error. But yet, we all know, and sitting here, and wouldn't be sitting here if we didn't know that our natural resources in Oregon are the heart of who we are. And are part of what we talk about when we talk about living in Oregon and why we love to be here and why we love the state. So how do we take that and translate it into making sure that investing in that is part of revenue conversations, part of budget conversations, part of policy, part of the core conversations that are going to happen, that we know are going to happen this session. And I don't think, I hope not, I hope we're not going to produce a budget that cuts 1.5 to 1.6 to 1.7 billion, whatever the number is. We're going to raise revenue somewhere. And we need to all be thinking about how we insert natural resources into and their protection and their sustainable use into that conversation.
Okay, thank you. Well said. Okay. Jim has passed out the approval signatures, and you want to change the wording just a little bit on that, don't you?
I just need your signatures. Don't worry about everything else. It's okay.
Well, in reality, what we're just signing we are signing to the Joint Interim Task Force report. That's what we're signing. We're not signing the I don't know how did you word it before. We're signing the report.
Final report.
Yeah, the final report. So if you feel so inclined, if you do so, and then when you're done here, we'll pass these on to Jim, and then the others on the phone, we'll get those to you, and then we'll have everybody hopefully taken care of. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to you, and we're going to recess. And
so, we're adjourning to the second half of the meeting. So we are journeying to the Archive Coffee and Bar, which is right in downtown Salem, 102 Liberty Street. We're on the first floor. We have a room all set aside for us. I urge you to get there soon. We're there till 5. And I can share my stored up jokes at that time.
Okay, and then I'd just like to, I don't know if all of you will be there, but I'd like to say it has been a privilege and an honor to have worked with you all for the last 8, 11, 10 months, whatever it's been. So I just want to thank you. We're not done yet, so that's the key. I think we heard it from the lobbyists and the others in the room. I think the work has just begun on finding adequate funding for the department. So thank you all for your dedication, for your efforts. Some of you have not missed a single meeting and worked behind the scenes to help talk about this out in the communities. And I think I can speak for everybody here, and at least for the department, the director. We very much appreciate your efforts. So thank you. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you. With that, we are adjourned. Your efforts. So.